Okay. Madam Chair, members, Senate Bill 1512 is granting a grandfathering exemption to the Global Language Institute. The Office of Higher Education decided a number of years ago that schools that were vocational or academic could not use the word institute or academy in their titles. And this school got kind of caught up in that. This is an avocational school. It's not a vocational or academic school. And so because it's a lot of expense and hassle to go through and change your name, especially if you have kind of a branding issue, as the Global Language Institute does, they asked for this exemption. You know, they went and talked to George Rodler at the Office of Higher Education, and the office agreed that they didn't have an issue with this, and Mr. Fuller came up with the approach that we're taking here. So I'd like to introduce President Sheila Hoffman Hicks, who's president of GLI, to just maybe say a few words about the purpose of their program. And then if you wanted to hear from Tricia Grimes from the office, she's here as well.
Thank you very much, and welcome, Dr. Hoffman Hicks. Please go ahead whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As Senator Pappas has said, my name is Sheila Hoffman Hicks. I'm the president of Global Language Institute. I'm also one of the owners, along with my colleagues behind me here, Mary Guillon, who is the Director of Admissions and Administration, and Art Carlson, who serves as CFO. Global Language Institute is a private language school that was established in 1990 here in St. Paul. We are still located downtown St. Paul. What we do is we provide intensive English language instruction to international students. Students come from elsewhere in the world to study for personal enrichment reasons and also to help them get a leg up on their English to study at colleges and universities in the region here. Some of them actually are already admitted by the time they come to us, and we help them to apply to colleges and universities. I often compare this to a situation where American college students are going to study abroad in other countries where English is not the language, and they need a boost in their language to prepare them for that. So we're kind of the flip side of that. We are an accredited school. We're accredited through ACET, the Accrediting Council on Continuing Education and Training, which is based in Washington, D.C., and one of two bodies that is authorized by the U.S. Department of Education to accredit vocational language programs like ours. We've been accredited since 1994. As a part of the accreditation and reaccreditation process, we are required to submit a recent letter from the Minnesota Office of Higher Education affirming that we continue to be exempt from state licensure. And that has been not an issue at all up until this past year or so, when we were going through reaccreditation, and Mr. Rodler at the office let us know that the law had changed, and that a school with one of these four words, including institute, which is in our name, would no longer be exempt. As Senator Pappas said, our concern with that is that the statute pertains to career schools and vocational schools, and we are I'm a little nervous. We are not a career school. We're an avocational school. We don't do job placement or career training at all. And so some of our concerns are that I think that in part we wouldn't actually probably fit the career school model. We may have a lot of trouble actually succeeding and being successfully licensed after all these years of doing what we do. And another thing is that it seems the change seems kind of inherently unfair to us, that another language program, another private language school that does essentially what we do, just, you know, some miles away from us, simply due to the fact that their founders some decades ago chose the word center and our founder chose the word institute some decades ago, that we would require to be licensed and they would not. So we hope that this is a reasonable request. Mr. Rodler had told me on the phone he thought it was unintended consequence that we would be affected by this, and so we're very thankful that the office has worked in putting language together to add this, or to the statute in this way, to have a grandfathering clause.
Thank you very much. Are there questions? Senator Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Pappas, this question may be more for the Office of Higher Education, but I don't want to assume, but are there other academies or institutes in Minnesota that maybe adopted that name after the August 1st, 2008 deadline that wouldn't fall into this category?
And Ms. Grimes has joined us at the table, so Ms. Grimes, please.
Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Tricia Grimes from the Office of Higher Education. Senator, we do not know of any. Okay. When we did a major rewrite of our statutes in 2008, and frankly, we should have done this differently at that time.
Okay. And, Madam Chair, just one
more
question.
Senator Brown.
Can I assume then that any institute that has college or university in their name are either a career or a vocational school?
Ms. Grimes.
To our knowledge, the ones operating in Minnesota are.
Okay. Thank you.
Excuse me for a minute. Quorum is present. So we are able to vote. Senator Saxog, put us over the top. And actually, Senator Brown asked a couple of the questions that I was thinking, too. Is there anything that you would want to add, Ms. Grimes, that maybe wasn't covered?
Senator, we appreciate the fact that Senator Pappas and the staff worked with us on this bill, and we do not have any objections to this bill. We think it's a good idea.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from the committee? And Senator Pappas, do you have anything that you'd like to add?
I don't, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure I make the right motion. Do I move to have Senate File 1512 included in the policy bill, or do you want it? Do we move to have it laid over for consideration?
We will lay it over for consideration in the policy bill.
Okay.
So Senator Pappas makes the motion to lay Senate File 1512 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus policy bill. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail.
Okay, thank
you very
much
both for bringing this to our attention. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
And now we have Senate File 1780, Senator Carlson. And I don't know if I should call him on not wearing a jacket or if the plaid vest makes a good replacement for that.
He's Paul Bunyan today.
He's Paul Bunyan today?
We're not on the floor.
We're not on the floor. Okay, so you caught me on that one. I was going to try to. But, yes, Senator Carlson, I understand you have a couple of people that you maybe want to bring up. I understand that President Hansen from Bemidji State is here and Ms. Laura King from Minsky maybe want to join you. But whenever you're ready and I have to do the requisite, go Beavers.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 1780 was brought to our attention from the Minsky system, and I think probably the best way to describe this bill is to allow Laura King to make the description.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm delighted to be here today with you to talk about the bill that we have in front of you. It really is a pretty straightforward proposal. You'll see it amends statutes, Chapter 136F. It's a position that's been supported by two governors over the years. It clears up confusion that hurts our ability to serve students and employers, and it levels the playing field between our colleges and universities, the University of Minnesota, private colleges, and nonprofits in the event that we face a situation similar to that which we faced this spring. So if I might just take 5 minutes and we have some remarks read into the record, Madam Chair, I'd appreciate
Please.
That. The objective of the amendment is to clarify the current law's force and effect by providing us access to appropriated receipts, technical and administrative support, as is currently provided in 16A.1286, and clear continued operational authority. Minsky has twice argued successfully that existing law enables us access to tuition and fee balances held in the state treasury. This argument relies both upon 136F74 and 16A1286. In 136F74, you'll find that we have continuing authority to carry over balances from 1 year to the next and from one biennium to the next. And that authority establishes the appropriation from year to year and from biennium to biennium. 16A1286 is the account that the Department of Finance uses to fund their statewide systems, accounting system, payroll, purchasing, and we are compelled in statute to pay for those services to the department. You'll also find in 135A19, which is the section of the statute that concerns the financial exigency language that we have that gives us the ability to fast-track layoffs in the event of a financial catastrophe, that the language also provides the legislature's intent that the board shall strive to provide uninterrupted services to students. In June 2011, the Department of Finance signed a letter with us authorizing us to continue access to our cash for payroll and vendor obligations. That was at the time of an impending shutdown back 10 years ago now. In the end, the use of this agreement was not required because the higher ed bill was passed and signed late in June, and operations continued. Having the agreement in place, however, enabled us to assure our students that classes would continue uninterrupted. In 2011, on June 15th, Governor Dayton included Minsky in his legal filings, citing our statutory and practical financial autonomy and our balanced carry-forward authority as his rationale for allowing us to remain open and continue operations during the most recent shutdown. In both 2001 and 2011, we were required to invest in legal support and executive and board time to make the case that we had existing authority to continue operations. We were required to communicate with our employees and with our public. We had to reassure students of their continued access to classes, labs, dorms, athletic programs. At this most recent event this past spring, we had 13,000 FYE already registered for summer school as we moved into June. And we had quite a challenge communicating with them about whether we were going to be open for school until we had a final determination from the litigation. Our customized training program runs 12 months a year. We serve over 6,000 businesses, and that work was imperiled as we moved into June without clarity about our ability to keep the payroll going. Our students had paid tuition. Many of them had received financial aid. We could have been in the position where we had to refund tuition and recapture federal financial aid dollars. It is likely that that kind of an action would have damaged the students' continued eligibility for financial aid and was really a horrifying prospect for us. In early June of 2011, we already had 100,000 students registered for fall term, and the May, June, July period is the peak registration period for us for fall term. An interruption of that work, were we to be forced to close, would have had really catastrophic financial and personal impacts on our students and our colleges. We had hundreds of international students living in our dorms, and we were faced with the prospect of figuring out what to do with them were we to have to close the dorms. There was tremendous media attention and anxiety among our students and their parents as summer planning was underway and then thrown into disarray. Our situation is further complicated by the mix of labor unions that we have in our organization. Some 35% of our employees are members of the classified units that are negotiated by the executive branch, about 6,200 people. The remaining 65% of our employees are members of our faculty unions, unions that we negotiate with directly. So we had a lot of confusion about who was issuing layoff notices, who would issue the rescinding notices, employees that were in the same bargaining unit and that in different bargaining units in the same town, we're getting different messages about what the consequences were for them. Finally, we had over 500 employees that were engaged in work that was paid for outside of the general fund, and there was a lack of clarity about what the implications were for their work. We were required to issue notices of work stoppage to all of our construction contracts, and then pull those work stoppage notices back at the end of June. So as you can imagine, there was a lot of anxiety and confusion, and in the end, we believe that we came to the right conclusion. We think this legislation will avoid that whole exercise for us should the day arrive again. The proposed language would provide explicit authority to MMB to maintain access to our payroll, accounting, and vendor services, and preserve our relationship with the statewide IT platform. It may not be known, Madam Chair, that we host at 19 of our sites the state's information technology platform that provides services to K-12, to cities, and to counties, running through our buildings, through our lines, and through our servers. We would pay MMB a daily rate for these services, and you have a fiscal note in your package, and that illustrates for you that we see no marginal cost increase or no incremental cost increase as a result of this statutory change, because we already pay MMB for this service, and we would simply continue to pay them for it. We think the proposal is basic common sense and would provide a great service to our current students, our current employees, and to the public, and by enabling us to be clear communicators about our status in the event of a future late higher ed bill. I'm fortunate today to have President Hansen from Bemidji State University in the building for, is it Paul Bunyan Days? Is that what we're doing?
Bemidji Day at the Capitol.
Bemidji Day at the Capitol. And, Madam Chair, with your indulgence, I'd like to ask President Hansen just to put a little local impact onto this, if we could.
Certainly. Welcome, President Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members, Senator Carlson, and Vice Chancellor King. We really came to take over the Capitol.
You're marching.
The plaid is all over. If you looked around, it's kind of scary. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I won't take much of your time, but one of the things we stress on our campus is that the single most important thing that we do is create circumstances where students can experience success. Success in terms of moving on, success in terms of vocation, success in terms of meeting their desired goals. The situation last summer was my first encounter as a president, and I've been president in other states, but I've never encountered the prospect of shutting the institution down. And when word first came down, Bill Mackey, our chief financial officer, and I spent quite a while designing a plan where we had to shut down the physical plant. I think those facts are what they are. What I want to share with you for just a minute is the impact on the students. One of the first calls I got when the rumors started floating around was from a student who was involved in an internship. And we had a couple of hundred students involved in internships over the summer. Now, these are critical to the completion of academic and academic programs and vocational plans. And the student said, what will happen to my internship? And I said, well, we lose the authority. It will stop. And that was not good news to her. It was very bad news to her. In addition to internships, we had international students on campus, and shutting down the halls meant tremendous problems in dealing with those people. I mean, you have to be compassionate, but they don't have a place to go. That's their home. So we have internships, we have international students, and we have several other kinds of things like that that greatly impact our students and inhibit our ability to do what we say we're going to do, and that is to contribute to their success. So we find this this effort very important and support it completely. I don't want to get into that mode next summer or whenever the next session is. Hopefully we won't slip into that kind of thing. But it produces a great stress on the people, and it inhibits our ability to do our job, and it really impacts the lives of these individuals. So that's the message I wanted to bring. It's very personal. It's not about the institution and mothballing dormitories. It's about individual people who have this opportunity just yanked away. It's very difficult for them. So I do appreciate the opportunity to share that with you. It was traumatic for a few weeks, and I was sharing with Vice Chancellor King. There were 4 weeks there where I didn't sleep very well, because I didn't sleep very well at all, because I didn't know what we were going to do and how we were going to do it. And thankfully, that we didn't have to do anything like that. But I would certainly support these efforts and thank Senator Carlson for his work. And thank you for the opportunity to share that. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Questions from the committee. Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. President Hansen, when we got into this particular situation, the shutdown, last summer, last spring. So I'm assuming because of this trauma that was going to come on the university, that every college student and every administrator, everybody called up the governor and the legislators and said, hey, you got to get this done because this is going to ruin the university. The reason I say that is I'm in total frustration, not with this bill. It's certainly got merit. But, you know, yesterday I was in the Environment and Natural Resources, and there was a right to hunt and fish bill, you know, that we were going to shut that one down if, you know, we were going to have problems there if we had a shutdown in state government. So the frustration is that, first of all, a shutdown's meant to put the feet to the fire, so to speak. It's meant for us to make decisions as legislators and as the governor. Else, you know, we should be beat up for it, figuratively. And I would suggest that we have some type of a lights on bill. If we're all so afraid of something not happening here, why don't we do that? That's just an editorial for us, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Well, and I will respond a little bit by saying that I know that when we were looking at the shutdown, there are some very special circumstances, and I think Ms. King expressed a lot of those with MNSCU and the great variety of the services and the budgetary issues that they face. So, and I remember just before the shutdown, we were scrambling because there is money. They had the money. The tuition had been paid. And so there was an issue with just being able to access that money. Senator Saxon.
Well, Madam Chair, I understand that. Again, I'm not talking to any one group or, but we had a whole series of exceptions. What do we call that person? It wasn't the Grand Poobah, it was the Grand Marshal or the person who could make the decision whether something was necessary or not. And
special
so we
master.
Go right
wasn't
down
it
the
special
line.
Master? Special master. Everybody was whispering, so we might escape. I believe it was the special master. Senator Saxon.
And pretty soon, everything will be taken care of, and everything will be an exception. And again, there will be no reason for us to get this done as quickly as possible. So it's just a frustration. And I think that we ought to deal with it in a different way, like, as I say, a lights on bill, something like that. Mm-hmm.
And as you recall, there was discussions about lights on bills during that period of time too. So didn't happen, but that's all history now. Senator Sharon, and then Senator Eaton.
Thank you. I'm just sort of following along the same line as Senator Saxon. I think that there's no question, and the testifiers indicated. What terrible things can happen if this legislature fails to put together a piece of legislation that can be supported and brought to a governor's signature, and that's our responsibility. And through conference committees, through engagement of all of the interest groups, you can listen to and hear about what would make a bill successful in terms of getting it through the legislature and getting a signature on it, and that's the responsibility and the work of this legislature, and we failed to do that. So I'm not disagreeing with the testimony that there's terrible hardship that occurs, whether it's in this budget or I heard a similar bill in transportation. You've heard it now in natural resources, which are bills to say, hey, if you guys can't get your act together, at least don't let there be any consequences to it. Imposed on the state in the state's functions, but I really think that would be a very, very erroneous direction for us to take in this committee, in transportation, in the committee that you refer to, or in any committee, because what in effect it does in each committee is say it's irrelevant whether or not we work out a deal. The budget will continue as is. You're making a decision to continue the budget as is and does nothing to encourage anybody who's happy with that will simply stay away from negotiations. If it just sort of rolls out as is, anybody that's unhappy with that, that's trying to get a solution done, is completely lost power in the negotiations. So I think that in terms of disciplining ourselves or in terms of helping us as a group of legislators who may have very different views or different concepts of how to solve state problems,
that there are things that we can do other than what's being proposed here to increase our discipline for the resolution of the budgetary process, other than removing the very consequences that we need to understand completely before either taking an action or an inaction. And so while I have heard the testimony here about this, care very much about the universities in my district and the students who are there who are affected by our inability to create a budget as a legislature that the governor would sign, I think to do this in this committee or any other committee undermines the very factors that are in place now by our rules and by how we proceed that help us mediate an outcome of the various interests of the stakeholders. So I'm not in support on that basis of this bill.
And I think that Vice Chancellor King wanted to make a comment on some of the, so please.
When, Madam Chair, if you're at your convenience, I completely agree that what you heard from me was a recitation of very adverse consequences. But what you also heard from me was that we believe that we're in a different existing legal posture than other parties that are before you this year. We've had two governors under two different administrations come to the conclusion that we have existing legal authority to access our funds and to get service for the payroll and vendor processing. So it's a different. We're starting the debate in a different position. We have had two different governors conclude that current law provides us the authority to continue operations, and so we're not starting from an argument that we don't have that authority today and we'd like it, but rather that we do have it, and in the interest of being able to clearly communicate with our students and with the public that we serve, this amendment is proposed so that we don't have to go back through the legal analysis a third time to reach the same conclusion. Statute is already in place that provides us access to our funds. Statutory language is in place that directs us to pay the department for services and for the department to provide those services, and language is in place that indicates the legislature's intent that we take all steps possible to maintain services to students. And that's really what we're proposing, Madam Chair, with this language.
Thank you. Follow up, Senator Sharon?
Well, I'm trying to remember the history of that whole shutdown thing, but you know, if that's the case, if it's already allowed, then it would be allowed by a special master. I'm trying to decide if the special master, in terms of determining what's essential, supported that this be included or not.
Madam Chair, I can address that if you'd like, Senator Sharon.
Vice Chancellor King.
The governor, in his filings, excluded us from consideration. And provided that, to quote his filing, statutory and practical financial autonomy and its balanced carry-forward authority was the rationale to remain open. And so we were just set aside in the litigation and allowed to continue operations. But it was June 15th before that determination was made. And by then, we'd lost students to summer school, we'd lost students to fall term, and we'd issued stop work orders, we'd issued layoff notices. The whole organization was in an uproar.
Senator Sharon.
Yeah, I just want to make sure I understood what you just said.
Okay.
The governor the governor issued an order that did what you're saying is done in this bill.
Vice Chancellor King.
I see Senator Winkler, perhaps. Senator Miller.
Senator Miller, I do have several other people. Okay. If it's okay. Directly to answer that question.
Well, I was just going to, Madam Chair, it is directly to this. It sounds like there was, Vice Chancellor, that there was a level of uncertainty of whether or not the governor was going to include that. And because of that uncertainty, the layoffs and the summer school and the students were unsure. So based on Senator Sharon's question and your answer, it sounds like because of the date, June 15th, it was later than expected, and there was uncertainty within the Minsky system as to whether or not that was going to be included, and this legislation would address that uncertainty.
Vice Chancellor King.
Chair, Senator Miller, that's exactly right. Okay. Until we had clarity about the governor's intention in his filing with the court, we did not have assurance that we could presume ourselves able to stay open.
Senator Eaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do echo Senator Sharon's words. I would like to add that my perspective with the many people I knew as public employees was that they had already accumulated mortgages and car payments and had children to feed and camps they were going to go to and all sorts of things that this severely inconvenienced. And they had no other way of going around that either. Their wages were stopped. So I don't see why the college would be more essential than the citizens.
Senator Brown was next on the list.
Madam Chair, I'm just requesting roll call on this vote.
Roll call has been requested. Roll call granted. Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, I don't think the argument is so much that colleges are more essential. I think it is more an argument that the colleges, in a sense, it's by chance that Minnesota Office of Budget and Management handles their payroll. We could have had a separate entity. They could handle their payroll themselves. So it's really a matter of they have the Board of Trustees. They contract, if you will, with management and budget to handle their payroll. So that was, to me, that's really the distinction here and why we should pass this legislation to clarify that.
Further discussion or questions from the committee? Senator Latz.
Has the governor expressed any position on this bill?
Senator, Vice Chancellor King.
Senator Latz, I spoke with the governor's staff and got from them a no position response. You'll see the fiscal note indicates no MMB costs beyond what we already pay them. But beyond that, I've had no indication beyond making them aware of it and not having been told one way or the other whether they were going to support it.
Senator Latz.
Also, has Senate Counsel had a chance to take a look at the question of the legal posture that's been described by the testifiers?
Mr. Fuller.
Madam Chair, Senator Latz, no, I haven't. I mean, my intuitive sense is when they talk about the governor's filing, that the governor had a position and the special master accepted it. I mean, I think it would be clear that the governor is subject to the laws as the special master and the judicial system would interpret them. That's my, but I haven't studied it. So when they say the governor filed something, I assume it meant it was accepted and it was subject to some question whether it would be. I mean, it could have been challenged.
Senator Latz.
But as to the underlying legal question, to the whether or not the there was already legal authority for Minsky to access their funds and spend them, and whether this truly is just a statutory clarification of that legal authority or if this is more.
Mr. Fuller.
I have not researched, Madam Chair, Senator Letts, I haven't researched it. It's my intuitive sense that if there must be some doubt in that situation because the law is being clarified and there's not, this precedent might not necessarily be binding in the future. That would be my sense. Otherwise, there'd be no need to do this unless the witness is saying this is strictly comfort language and confirming the existing situation. That's not my sense. My sense is there's some doubt.
Senator Letts.
And then, I'm sorry I missed the first part of the meeting on this, but this would only allow the expenditure of funds that had already been appropriated.
Oh. Mr. Fuller.
Madam Chair, Senator Letts. No, this is money they have on hand. They acquire services from management and budget to allow them to carry out these functions. And the question is the money going to management and budget. It's their ability to get money to them and management and budget to carry out activities. That's the issue.
Senator Letts.
Is that in a different posture than appropriations to other state agencies or recipients of state funds that expire in terms of authority at the end of the biennium?
Madam
Mr.
Chair,
Fuller.
Senator Letts, there's a couple aspects to that. Many state agencies get these services from the executive branch. They are in a different financial posture in the sense of they don't have the carryover authority, they don't have the revenues, they don't have cash on hand that will let them carry on operations for one of two reasons, I assume. One is they've run out of money because of the appropriation, and then they don't have an independent source of revenue other than appropriations.
And I believe Vice Chancellor King has something to add to that, to those questions.
Just to assist a bit with Mr. Fuller, Madam Chair, Senator Latz, we have language in statute that's been there as long as I am aware that provides us authority to roll our fund balance forward from what it, and it's appropriated from one year to the next and from one biennium to the next. So we were in the situation last June where we had tuition and earned income sitting in the state treasury in excess of $600 million. It was already appropriated. It didn't need any further legal action in order for us to spend it. And it's on hand. That's what the first part of the statutory site goes to. The second part goes to the language in the MMB chapter that provides in a special revenue account outside of the general fund for MMB to essentially run an internal service account and bill agencies for statewide system support. So what this amendment provides is that they can provide those services to us and bill us as they do now, and we can pay them in the special revenue account outside the general fund in the event that there's otherwise an interruption in state service.
So,
Senator Latz.
Thank you. So these are funds other than funds that might have been appropriated by the legislature and would no longer be available for use at the expiration of the biennium.
Vice Chancellor King.
Madam Chair, Senator Latz, we do not have lapsing appropriations at all. And that goes to Senator Pappas's point that we're sort of an odd animal in the state accounting system. When funds are appropriated to us in the higher ed bill, they're appropriated to us and they're available to us until expended. And if there are remaining balances at the end of the biennium, current law reappropriates them to us for the following biennium.
Senator Sharon?
But they could choose not to reappropriate. They might
Madam Chair,
borrow those dollars and use it for something for debt reduction, correct?
That would, in my worldview, that would amount to a budget cut. And
right.
And you'd have to pass a law to cut our appropriation. That's right.
Senator Sharon?
I just have a general question for you, Madam Chair. What is your intent in terms of the motion on this bill?
This will be passed on to finance. They've requested it in finance, so we would be passing it to finance committee. Further discussion, Senator Lori.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, and I'm struggling with some of the same questions. I mean, I'm really uncomfortable with the idea of broadly, and we are seeing these in every committee that we sit on, these bills to lessen the pressure to get a deal done. And I'm very, very concerned that what that'll mean is that we just roll forward without ever getting a deal done. When you remove a timeline and a deadline and ramifications of failing to meet a deal, it's nearly impossible to do so. So I'm somewhat troubled by this. And we've seen it over and over again. But I guess my specific question is, it says, notwithstanding any other law to the contrary, to the extent that the board has receipts under this section, what are these receipts? Where is this money coming from? What is this? What exactly is this money? Is this tuition money then?
Or? Vice Chancellor King.
Madam Chair, Senator Lori, we have from one year to the next, we have budget reserves that the campuses build up. Because they're concerned about upcoming budget cuts or they're trying to save a debt service deposit in a future capital project. We have board policy that requires the campuses to maintain a balance. Our national accrediting entities require us to have cash balances as a financial management condition. So we have several hundred million dollars spread out across all 31 colleges and universities that are in our accounts from one year to the next on purpose, by design, as a financial management consideration. They could be parking revenues, they could be bookstore income, they could be tuition receipts that exceeded the budget. We had a couple of years where enrollment ran ahead of our forecasts, and prudent budgeters didn't budget to spend revenue they didn't know they were going to have. They could be state appropriated dollars, although that's less likely because those dollars are generally spent first. They could be a gift that the university or the college might have received. So it could be any kind of activity. We are about a $1.9 billion a year organization. We have a payroll of almost $1 billion. So we get large numbers when we add it all together.
Senator Eaton.
I just had a question, Madam Chair. I don't know who to ask it to, but I'm wondering if this language allows the Department of Management and Budget to perform those services for any other agency.
Well, Mr. Fuller, you stepped away, but I think there maybe is a question that you could potentially field. Senator, could you repeat that?
Yes. My question is that I'm wondering if under this language, this these services could be provided by the Department of Management and Budget for other agencies?
Mr. Fuller.
Madam Chair, I don't believe so. Under this bill, it's restricted to the state universities and colleges. I mean, I was going to bring over to Senator Latz that the section that's referred to that describes how management and budget can assess up to, I think, $7.25 million a year for these services and spread them over the various agencies. So that's the pre-existing law, but this statute is limited to the Minsky system for the, in the bill.
Thank you.
The bill is limited to Minsky.
Senator Roebling.
Chair, and I, Senator Lori, I think because the decision, from my understanding, was made already on June 15th, that they could move forward, although it caused some panic and when we finished the regular session and there was no higher ed bill, really the pressure to get something done before a shutdown in this area was somewhat relieved already. So I don't know that it was a factor or that it would be in the future. I understand your idea that you need some pressure to get the job done, but I think in this case it wasn't really a factor. It might not be in the future, but it will always cause panic until it's clarified. Although we do have precedent in two cases now, and so it maybe would always be approved, but just to have to go through that clarification every time is unnecessary when we could do something as simple as pass this.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and actually Senator Roebling just said basically exactly what I was going to say. These dollars are already there. It's in the budget reserve. Or twice it's been approved by the Grand Puma or the master plan or whoever it is.
Special master.
Special master. Grand Puma. But it causes this concern. So hopefully there's not another budget shutdown. None of us want a government shutdown. None of us want to go through that again. But in the case that there is another one in the future, this just provides that certainty before that June 15th date. Again, twice it's already been approved, but this way they don't have to go wait for that date to use the money that's already in the budget reserve account.
Senator Latz.
Two questions. One is, how would this be different than, say, fishing license revenue that's received and might be sitting in an account waiting to be spent by that agency? And secondly, how is this different than the University of Minnesota? When we appropriate money to the University of Minnesota, does it go out the door right away to be maintained by them in their own account system so that it's our hands aren't involved anymore, but for Minsky, it just resides in a state agency account instead? Mm-hmm. Maybe someone can clarify.
Madam Chair, Senator Latz, that's exactly right. When you pass a budget bill with an appropriation for the university, MMB meters out that appropriation on a 1/12th basis or a 1/24th basis, just like they do for us. The difference is that in the case of the University of Minnesota, the funds leave the state accounts. They go across the river into University of Minnesota bank accounts. In our case, the funds move from one general fund account to another general fund account and never leave the state entity, the state organization. The difference between us and the University of Minnesota is that the university wasn't faced with this. Last spring, the university wasn't, there was no conversation going on over there about closing or about shutting the university because they had access to their internal funds and they had their own payroll system. So we were substantially on a different footprint than they were because we happened to be a customer of the state accounting system.
And to my first question, fishing license fees, how, or other licensing fees that go into the, I doubt Vice Chancellor King would know the answer to this
Vice
question.
Vice Chancellor King is going to attempt to answer the fishing license question.
Madam Chair, Senator Latz, as a general matter, those are probably special revenue funds, which is a little bit like our situation. What I'm just not aware of is whether they have language and statute that appropriates the funds from year to year and biennium to biennium. That's what really separates our facts from the general case, because we have what amounts to an open and standing appropriation of our own receipts. I can't speak to whether fishing license receipts, I doubt they appropriate at the end of the biennium, but maybe there's someone from MMB here that could answer that. But they're likely outside the general fund, which makes them a little bit like our receipts in that regard.
I have Senator Laurie and then Senator Sharon. Senator Laurie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess, Senator Roebling and I are going to have a conversation here, I guess. But, panic equals pressure. Nobody knows what's going to happen under a shutdown. People don't know if they're going to get their cancer treatments that are on our public systems. And they're panicking. And that is the pressure for us to come up to a deal. People at Minsky don't know how their budget's going to work under a state shutdown. That's the panic. That is the pressure. It's this. You can't really, if people aren't panicking, they're not putting the pressure on their elected representatives to make a deal. And it's just, so I am very, and I felt that pressure from that panic. I'm very conflicted on this bill. I have two Minsky facilities in my district, in the district I represent. And I felt their panic, and I was called to talk to them. And it added a good deal of pressure on me. Unfortunately, I was powerless to actually move much towards compromise. I guess that's kind of my point. It is removing the panic removes the pressure, and it removes the impetus for us to get our work done and come to a compromise agreement. And that general prospect troubles me as we get remove the ramifications from what it is that is our job. It's going to be more and more difficult to do it. And these are bills that we're seeing in every single committee that we serve on. And the conversation is legitimate. And the ramifications are great. And I just think that, the people are going to continue to demand that we sit down and do our jobs. And I think that's really the solution that we should be looking for. I'm not sure. There's a roll call. I'll figure it out pretty quick here, I guess. But I'm really struggling with this.
Senator Sharon?
Well, I was just had asked this question earlier, and I understand that this is not resolved in this committee and that there'll be more opportunity to answer maybe some of the unanswered questions that, at least in my mind, would say this is clearly unique in not establishing a precedence for the other supposed lights on bills that are relieving the pressure, so it allows an opportunity to come back at this again. Because my concern, I think that there are better methods for us to resolve this and other issues in terms of, I'll be making some proposals about that in legislation to to insist on mediated outcomes or to insist on other solutions that strengthen our tools, our tool chest, and force us into resolution instead of getting to the shutdown, which I think are better solutions than removing what we need. You know, I think what's really, really unfortunate as I reflect on this is that the anxiety or the angst or the pain that a shutdown would cause seemed either unknown, did not create this pain didn't create the kind of pressure that it ought to have to us in terms of resolving our differences. And I don't know if that's because people didn't care or didn't believe there would be a shutdown or if they simply were not informed. But this experience is informative, and all of these lights on bills are going over the serious consequences of our failure. I share in the responsibility of listening to each other to find a way to change what we are proposing in enough of a way that we can get a signature from the governor. That's our job, and that takes both parties to make that happen. And I really may temporarily, I don't know what I'm going to do on this either, on a temporary basis, but this overriding issue of keeping us responsible for finding a way to get legislation in a form that the governor will sign it, to the degree that anything we do here like this weakens that, I think we should not support it, because we are hurting, no matter who's in the majority or who is not, we hurt the process for resolving our differences.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I agree with Senator Lurie and Senator Sharon, and we need to get our work done in a bipartisan way, absolutely. I think there's no question about it that we need to do that. We need to find a way to get that done. My question for Ms. King, did I hear you correctly in saying that the University of Minnesota does not, they were not in this situation because they do everything internally once the money is appropriated? Is that correct?
Vice Chancellor King.
Madam Chair, Senator Miller, that's correct.
Okay.
They were telling their students they were staying open. There were articles in the paper that they were staying open, and we were in a position of having recruitment problems and communication problems as a result.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. King. Madam Chair, I think that's something else for this committee to think about then is, as the Senate Higher Ed Committee, is it fair? Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. That's for us to decide as a committee. But should Minsku be at what I would consider a competitive disadvantage compared to the University of Minnesota under these circumstances? That's for us to decide.
Senator Brown.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Lurie, I don't want to leave this meeting misunderstanding something that you just said, but can you clarify what you meant when you said you were powerless to do something? I interpret that a specific way, and it may not be the way you meant it, but I'm not understanding what you meant when you said that.
Senator Lurie.
Madam Chair, Senator Brown, you know, I was down here through much of the debate. I mean, truthfully, it was not very encompassing of all of the members who come down here to represent people in Minnesota. I was here ready to put my best foot forward. I've done that for my entire tenure, and you know, I believe that things were very difficult to navigate for those of us in the minority, and that we were unable to really affect much of the agenda that was moving forward. And if that's what you took me to mean, that is what I meant. If you took me to mean something else, that's your prerogative.
Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Sharon.
On that issue, I think one of the, as I work on the language for trying to strengthen our, you know, negotiating pressures upon us, one of the things I'm looking at, you know, the ag bill was the bill that really got through, and that was they had a conference committee that was a mixed committee, so there was an opportunity for somebody like Senator Lurie to not feel powerless. He could have a place there that would help the chair of the Senate negotiate with the House and make changes in a way that that final bill would, you know, you could get feedback through Senator Lurie if he was on that as to what could you just slightly modify here and we'd get a signature on it. That's what was missing in so many of these bills. The conference committees either didn't meet or they failed to engage the Democrats in the problem-solving process for how do we get our legislation now in a form that we can get a signature. So that's one of the things I think we have to look at, how that happened well for the ag bill and how it did not happen very well for some of the other bills. So that's what I'm talking about, that we increase the capacity of the legislature to get the information about the consequences of policy before you pass them and engage the minority, whoever it is, in the process of finding the solutions that will get a signature and avoid a shutdown.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move Senate File 1780 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance.
Thank you. And there has been a roll call requested. The Secretary, I guess, do you take it or do you? Secretary will take the roll.
Senator Fischbach?
Yes.
Senator Brown?
Yes.
Senator Carlson?
Yes.
Senator Eaton?
Yes.
Senator Gimsey? Senator Koch?
Yes.
Senator Latz?
No.
Senator Lurie?
Yes.
Senator Miller?
Yes.
Senator Pappas?
Yes.
Senator Peterson?
Yes.
Senator Roebling?
Yes.
Senator Saxhog?
Yes.
Senator Sharon?
Is there a temporary yes?
No, Senator Sharon.
No.
You can pass.
You can pass.
There's an abstain.
I'll abstain. I'll abstain.
And a vote of 11 to 1, the bill is passed and re-referred to Finance Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for the thorough discussion.
Thank you very much. And we were going to have a third bill on the agenda, but it was removed because we thought that our new father, Senator Miller, would not be here today. So, unfortunately, he is. But unfortunately, he is. But you want to be
Madam
home
Chair,
with the baby.
I feel the same way.
You want to be home with the baby.
Job,
but we all
Jeremy.
Offer our congratulations, Senator Miller, on your new baby. And
get a boy.
So we get out a little early. When do we meet next? We will most likely meet Monday again with a couple other bills. And we are adjourned until then.